It's the Troopany Show with your host, James Troopany.
Hello, my name is James Troopany. This is my show on an emotional day where I've nearly threatened to throw two computers through the window of my office. I would like to welcome Mr. Marcus Green of Total Wrestling Magazine to my show. How are you, sir?
I'm good. Glad to be back.
I would also like to thank Mr. Alex Watt for attending today.
Hello. Yes, it's been a while, and you've had some trouble with technology. We should. I just want to give a shout out to Marcus's joke off air that said this has taken longer than Jericho trying to get that mask off, which I thought was great.
Yes, indeed. Today we are looking at the April stroke May season for New Japan Pro Wrestling. We're looking at wrestling how do you pronounce that? Hinokuni. And wrestling Pro Wrestling Dontaku. We're going to have a quick flash of Hinokuni because there's one main event that's really important, because we haven't really got time to do all of the matches, but we're going to do all the matches on Dontaku. So we're on the New Japan season. Let's have a bit of a roundup so far. Marcus, where do you think New Japan Pro Wrestling is at this moment before these three shows start?
I think it was right on time, right on track. I mean, you know, we talked about it before coming out of Sakura Genesis, you know, it's very hard to maintain, you know, the momentum that you get from, you know, Wrestle Kingdom, which basically steals the show at the beginning of the year. And I think that kind of sucks the air out of the industry in the best way possible. So for them to be able to continue any sort of momentum from, you know, Sakura on after is just, you know, incredible. And it just continues to astound that New Japan is able to do that with so many different storylines. But, you know, they nail it every show.
Yeah, I think I'd agree with you there. I mean, it's like, it seems to be so consistent at the moment. It seems to be just so well done at the minute. Does that make sense?
Yeah, yes. 100%.
Yeah, I agree. I think it's classic, getting all the pieces in place right before the big shows, the way they built to, obviously you had on the second show, which was the best of the three. If that makes sense, the second Dontaku show, I mean, it was the best of the three shows we're going to look at, where you had two massive rematches, basically, particularly with Okada and Tanahashi, like the whole backstory and everything that went into that to get them, you know, wrestling. Basic, having it timed so that Tanahashi was challenging, trying to stop Okada from breaking his record and everything like that. It's just how much time and effort they put into getting those pieces into place.
Yeah, I would completely agree with that. Everything seems so meticulous as of late with New Japan Pro Wrestling. It's hard for them to do anything wrong, to be honest with you.
It's interesting as well, because like, we'll talk about this more later with how they're setting up going into the summer and with the Best of the Super Juniors and Dominion. But it almost felt like it wasn't clear what the direction was going to be going into Dominion. Then at the end of the show, it was like, oh, we've got the card of the year coming up now, just out of nowhere. They just completely put everything into place.
Indeed. Right then, let's move on to reviewing these here shows. We'll start with New Japan Wrestling Hinokuni. Hinokuni.
I'm just going to say it differently every time.
Hinokuni 2018. We'll go match by match, but we're not going to review all of them. Rini Narita and Yuji Nagata defeated Shota Umino, that's Red Shoe Son, and Tomoyuki Oka, who has lost a lot of weight. Like, he's lost a whole person's worth of weight. There was an 8-man tag match. Dave Finley, Jushin Thunder Liger, and Raisuke Taguchi and Tiger Mask defeated Chaos, Jay White, Rocky Romero, Sho and Yo in 7 minutes and 18 seconds. There was a straight up tag match. Tomohiro Ishii and Toriyano defeated Toa Henare and Togi Makabe. This was a running theme and a bit of a mid card feud for the whole series, because yeah, Ishii and Henare Henare showed a lot of development against Ishii. There was an 8-man tag. Suzuki Gun, Takahashi Iizuka and Zack Sabre Jr. There's an awful lot of people beginning with T in that team. They defeat the Golden Lovers, Kenny Omega, Kota Ibushi, Chase and Bullet Clubs, Chase Owens and Yujiro Takahashi in 8 minutes and 51 seconds. Actually, I'm going to go back and watch that one because that sounded really cool. Just the lineup sounded really cool. There was another 8-man tag. Tanahashi, Juice Robinson, Kushida and Michael Elgin defeated Chaos, Hiroki Goto, Kazuchika Okada, Will Ospreay and Yoshihashi. And all I can say to that is boo. And then there was a single match with Bushi defeated El Desperado in the continuing LIJ Suzuki Gun feud. There was a singles match between Hiromu Takahashi and Yoshinobu Kanemura, and again in the ongoing LIG Suzuki Gun feud, and IWGP Tag Team Champions Los Ignorables Depan successfully defended against the Killer Elite Squad, Davey Boy Smith and Lance Archer. But the match we're most interested in from this card was Tetsuya Naito, who defeated Minoru Suzuki in 30 minutes and 42 seconds for the Intercontinental Heavyweight Championship. So I'm going to give the moment to Mr. Alex Watt, whose favourite wrestler takes the belt.
Well, yes. Well, one of my favourite wrestlers. He's up there. Yeah, I thought this was a great match with at the time, a surprising result, although now it makes a hell of a lot more sense after what happened at Dontaku, which I guess we'll talk about later on. Am I correct?
Yes, we will. Yes.
Don't want to go into that too much now, but... Yeah, it just worked really well with Suzuki being his usual despicable, horrible self, and Naito being the resilient babyface, but still doing his usual, you know, anti-hero type stuff, you know, spitting in the face, which against Suzuki is a bold strategy, which I'm not sure it's ever a good idea, but there you go. But yeah, he played the resilient babyface really well, particularly when he was in that leg lock for absolutely ages and was just selling it so well and fighting through the pain, and the crowd were completely behind him. It's stuff that, like, Tanahashi always does great, and I think Naito was on that kind of level of selling, you know, how bad the hold was and how much he wanted to get to the ropes. You had lots of good spots. You had Suzuki mocking Naito's Tranquilo fake out thing, which was great. There was a great spot where Suzuki got Naito in a leg lock in the ropes instead of his usual armbar. And then the bit at the end where Naito just started slapping the hell out of him was great. Just like giving Suzuki a taste of his own medicine. And then, yeah, Juan Destino finished it, which was probably the surprising bit. Felt a bit abrupt the way it ended. I don't know if Suzuki was bleeding a bit. He maybe was knocked a bit loopy. I don't know. So maybe they called an audible or something, because it did feel a bit abrupt. But then they had Naito's music cued straight up, so maybe I'm reading too much into that.
I think so, a little bit.
But yeah, it's just a great main event, what you'd expect from both those guys, really.
How babyface is he, though? Because he's spitting at his opponents. And to be honest with you, I couldn't wait for Suzuki to kill him.
That's the weird thing about it, because it's like, he's basically an anti-hero, isn't he? He's, you know, how babyface was Stone Cold Steve Austin and stuff like that.
But he didn't go around spitting at people.
No, he just stunned everyone.
He was the most cursing this good guy you knew. Yeah.
Okay, then. Well, yeah, I did agree with you that the match was fantastic, and I did expect something this good from them too. Because I kind of watched it out of order and I watched this match last, it was slightly anticlimactic compared to the other two main events we had. But in itself, I love Minoru Suzuki and what he's doing at the moment. I would also point out, he wrestles a lot more like Zack Sabre Jr. lately. He started adapting some of Zack Sabre Jr.'s folk wrestling approach of making things up as it go along and stopping people from getting to the ropes and stuff, and I find that really interesting, because Minoru Suzuki doesn't change much. He adapts very slowly, but when he finds something, he goes with it, and I thought that was really, really cool.
Yeah, well, they've been tagging together a lot as well, haven't they? So that's probably part of it.
Last night they were in London and defended the Rev Pro Tag Team Championships against Travis Banks and Chris Brooks CCK, which would have been a bit of a corker, I feel. I don't think Chris dare let Kid Lykos in the ring with Minoru Suzuki, because he might just break his arm by looking at him. So
he'd be neutered.
Poor Wolf, cone of shame forevermore. Marcus, what do you think of this particular matchup?
Similar to you boys, man. You know, definitely not my favorite of these three shows. Probably ranked three in terms of the main events. But yeah, definitely a hell of a match. You know, these two were not going to deliver anything less than that. And you know, really, what it came down to me just looking at it was like an ultimate pissing contest between these two, because obviously, different things kind of kicked off. You know, Naito couldn't be bothered, but it's like, it's Suzuki, he bothers everyone. So, you know, when it comes off like that, he kind of he made Naito step up, and obviously, you know, Naito came into that, you know, with two Achilles heels because both of his knees were taped up. So, you know, that was like blood in the water for Suzuki, who, like you said, is getting more like Zach, you know, in terms of that submission and just, you know, attacking those limbs, because usually he relied more on that sleeper, and in the past that's kind of been a detriment to him, because guys could kind of slip out and capitalize and get the win off of that. But it really got convincing when he kept locking in those heel hooks, and obviously he locked in a great looking figure four. So that was great. Didn't think it was gonna take one Destino, like Alex said, because it's kind of been Naito's thing, having it multiple Destinos. But besides that, the spitting and everything, if you look at it from the perspective of he's spitting, if you have frame it in your mind, he's spitting in Suzuki's face for the young boy, then he comes off as a hero. Naito's always going to be Naito regardless. But cracking match, and like Alex said, didn't see the result coming. But when you see where it's going, you know, there's no denying it probably was the right decision. And Suzuki's not a guy that needs a title anyway. I mean,
No,
he is the show when he comes out. Even if he's not the main event, he's going to make you remember what he did on any show.
Yeah, I still got goose pimples as he came out to Cozy in the NRA. So, yeah. I still
always
get to see.
But yeah, I think it was a surprise, because I think people were expecting Suzuki to probably hold the title for the whole year. He was having a good run. But like we say, it makes a lot more sense why they made that booking decision now after what happened at the next shows.
And to be fair to Minoru Suzuki, he gets to main event his 30th anniversary show against Kazuchika Okada next month.
Yeah, not too shabby, that.
No,
to be
it's
fair.
Not. And I think we'll probably do a beginner's guide to Japan solely on Minoru Suzuki in the run-up to that event, because I think that's probably the best time to do things. So look out for that, and we will go back over Minoru Suzuki and his entire career at that point. Right then, where was we? We're going to move on to Actual Pro Wrestling Dontaku, which opened with a tag team match. Bullet Club, Chase Owens and Yujiro Takahashi. Arguably the Tokyo Pimps. Apparently that's news to Chase Owens. He doesn't feel he is pimpish. But he is the golden side chick.
He isn't very pimpish, though, is he?
No, he's not. He's kind of Chase, isn't he? He does chasey things. They defeated.
Got to pick up some partners from Jews in the tire department. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. But I like Chase as he is. Chase should be the slightly overweight white guy who can wrestle really well. Not overweight, just slightly overweight, just enough. The only reason why he's heavyweight is because he had a couple too many hamburgers. Anyway, they defeated Shota Umino and Yoti Tsuji, the latest of the young lions coming up, in 5 minutes and 32 seconds. Package pile driver, as you'd expect. Did what it said on the tin, got the young lion some experience, and got Chase's finisher over in a big way. What did you think of this, Marcus?
Thought it was cool. I thought it was, cracking open, and always like seeing, Chase, as we talked about before, always got to thank you, Jerome, for the entrance. and he's always good in these type of scenarios. He really goes all out when he wants to. So, like you said, it was a good opener. Got these young boys some shine, which was the point, because we've seen a lot of great development with that. So, yeah, just a solid opener.
It was Peter on that night, wasn't it? But Peter wasn't on the next night.
Yeah.
Interesting. Maybe she had a prior booking. Maybe she had a prior engagement. she does, I think she would. No, it's not her. It's the original Yellow Barbie. Mao, she doesn't wrestle for anyone. She is now a ring girl for Rizin. So, there you go.
Ah, interesting.
Yes, there you go. Anyway, Alex, did you see this matchup?
Yeah, I mean, it's like you say, did what it said in the tin. Solid, short. You had the young lions showing the fire, as you would expect. And then, it's not a lot you can say about it.
No.
It was good for what it was.
It was all right, yeah. Next match was a six-man tag match. Jushin Thunder Liger, Raisuki Taguchi, and Tiger Mask defeated Ren Narita, Tomoyuki Oka, and Yuji Nagata. 7 minutes and 12 seconds. Young boy showing a bit of disrespect to Liger. Didn't like that very much. What were you thinking? all right, though. It was fun and entertaining. 7 minutes and 12 seconds. Alex, what did you think of this one?
Yeah, again, good stuff. It's obviously getting certain guys wins again ahead of the Super Juniors, particularly Taguchi, who we sort of make fun of him sometimes a little bit because of his persona, but But when he wants to work, he's a very good worker. And in the best of the Super Juniors, he usually pulls it out and has pretty much the last few years, he's had really good runs in that tournament. So the fact that he got the pin here with 500 ass attacks or whatever he did is obviously making it, getting him looking strong again ahead of the best of the Super Juniors. So, but yeah, and also I assume Liger will take on Mysterio now at Dominion. Has that been confirmed yet?
I think
Ray's confirmed he's going to be there, hasn't he? So
yeah. Interesting. I also watched this card mostly with Cy Heath on the bus to Bethnal Green last week on my way to Wrestle Kingdom, and Cy informed me this is his second favourite theme song in New Japan Pro Wrestling is Rusuke Taguchi.
Wow, that's an interesting one.
as Cy said, it's a banger. That's his ultimate endorsement. It's a banger.
It's a banger, eh? Yeah. I don't know if I'd go with that, but fair enough.
Marcus, what did you think of this?
Oh, yeah, it was good. Tiger Mask, Taguchi. You know, it's always fun seeing Taguchi because, like Alex said, he could be more guys that could be made more fun of. But when he turns it on, he, again, you know, with those hip attacks, he can get it done as well. And it's going to be interesting seeing, like you said, if he's on the face Rey Mysterio, because obviously that's something we missed out on. But yeah, another solid opener, went longer than the first match. But another instance of where, you know, once we get to the end of the show, we kind of see where these cars are able to build towards certain things. Obviously, the next match didn't go the way a certain particular group thought it was going to go. But you know, just to build on how things go, I thought it was solid.
Indeed, Rocky Romero, Sho, and Yo defeated Suzuki Gun, Davey Boy Smith, Lance Archer of Killer Elite Squad, and Taiyakeshi Ayazuki in 2 minutes and 4 seconds with a roll-up from Yo on Ayazuki, which was hilarious. It was a thoroughly entertaining match. Well, what do you do with these guys? And it just really did what it was. Big guy versus small guy. You could tell who the faces were. You could tell who the heels were. Ayazuki gets embarrassed. We move on. Couldn't be asked for more. What did you think of this, Marcus?
Same as you. It was hilarious. I mean, that's, you know, times when you think about a match involving the Killer Elite Squad, it's so much going on outside the ring, you know, before the match even starts, which makes him a perfect fit for Suzuki Gun. But, yeah, you know, that's what happens. You should, you know, focus more on the match than freaking showering the people with water. So, you know, they paid for it, and it was hilarious, like you said.
What do you think of this one, Alex?
They love being showered with water, the Japanese fans, don't they? But, yeah, it was, like you say, it was a good laugh. It was short, surprisingly short, but I get what they were going for. Show stealing Yano's gimmick essentially with a quick roll up for the win. But yeah, it's fun for what it was. It's interesting that Rocky is still doing these little six mans as well. Because is he semi retired now?
He's semi retired, but he's still been doing solo work for Ring of Honor.
Ah, interesting. I haven't seen much ROH recently, so I didn't realize he was still doing a lot of singles wrestling there. That's interesting.
Yeah, he seems to go over for a taping and then does a singles match or two, but he's not like doing full feuds or anything like that. I think he's kind of like just a bit above enhancement talent, just kind of doing bits and pieces here and there for them as favors.
Yeah, well, I guess he's doing all the stuff behind the scenes, isn't he, with New Japan, so he's got quite a bit going on, I think.
Yeah, I think it's fair enough, really. Alright then, we move on next to the first championship match of the night. The Never Openweight Six-Man Tag Team Championships had changed hands as Bullet Club, Marty Scurll, Matt Jackson, Nick Jackson defeated Bullet Club, Bad Luck Fale, Tama Tonga and Tangaloa. 12 minutes and 5 seconds of a thoroughly entertaining match, and it wasn't just the Bucks and Marty Scurll who were doing the work. This was proper back and forth wrestling. Bad Luck Fale has developed so much as a tag team wrestler in the last 12 months. He really knows what he's doing, and Gorillas of Destiny. They are fantastic. And when they eventually do hook up with the Young Bucks as a regular tag team match, that's going to be something worth seeing. Alex, what do you think of this? And what do you think of the title change?
Yes, it's a good match. I agree with you on that tag between the Bucks and GOD will be class, I think, when it finally happens. But yeah, I think it was... I mean, we should say this whole night was basically built around this kind of Bullet Club implosion angle, because a lot of the matches were taking that kind of theme, or, you know, later on Cody and Ibushi is still keying into that that storyline. But yeah, I think it was a good move to switch the belts to the Young Bucks and Marty Scurll, because I think there's more fun trios, like trio match options with those three as champs. Like, they showed off some fun triple team moves here to get us started. But yeah, it was interesting in terms of the wider storyline of how they all shook hands at the beginning, and G.O.D. and Farley handed them the belts at the end. But there's all the stuff with the robes and that side of wearing them, the other side is Team Cody. So there's a lot of that stuff running through it, which was interesting. But other than that, it was just, you know, balls to the wall action. I loved the little stuff of Scurll constantly trying to pick up Farley and take him down. That was a nice little theme running through. And yeah, Nick Jackson's still got the best hot tag in the business. It is ridiculous whenever he comes in. And yeah, it was nice to see them win with more bang for your buck as well, because I feel like they haven't been pulling that out as much as of late. So that was a nice little touch as well.
What did you think of this, Marcus?
Yeah, piggybacking right off a lot of what Alex said, man. This was a fun thing. And you know, within the Bullet Club, with these two particular groups, you know, and I love how Kevin Kelly described it all weekend. It's like the uncivil war of Bullet Club. And this is really more of the civil in it, just because, you know, the Tongans and the Bucks really haven't, you know, they don't really have any beef like that. And apparently, I don't know what, you know, magical, mystical beef, you know, Scurll, you know, as much as I love him, has conjured up with Bad Luck Fale, but that won't end well. as we're gonna get to the second show, we're gonna see why. But yeah, it was fun. Didn't expect a title change, but, you know, like Alex said, it does create some very fun opportunities, and you see more of the momentum leaning towards, you know, the Bucks and Scurll's corner, because obviously the Bucks, and again, Kelly pointed something out. He was like, when did the Bucks start becoming body guys? Because they're solid physically, as they should, because they're elevating to the heavyweight. And when you talk a big game, you want to look the part as well. So, you know, a lot of momentum's in that corner as they get ready to face off, you know, against LIJ's finest. So, you know, that's really going to be interesting. I hate to see the Tongans and Tongans take the L, but they'll bounce back.
Yeah, I agree with you there. I think it was good for the storyline and good for the titles, really. In the one sense, we'll see how they improve these storylines for the six-man titles, because they've been doing pretty well with them this year. It's been fun to listen to them, fun watching them develop those two tag teams as well, that tag team as well. Right then, we move on to a 10-man tag match. Los Ignorables de Japón, Bushi, Evil, Hiromu Takahashi, Sanada and Tetsuya Naito defeat Suzuki-Gun, El Desperado, Minoru Suzuki, Tai Chi and Yoshinobu Kanemura, and Zack Sabre Jr., 13 minutes and 36 seconds in a thoroughly entertaining match that went back and forth and continued to tell the story of how much Minoru Suzuki hates Tetsuya Naito. Marcus, your thoughts?
Yeah, between this and the Uncivil War, I mean, these two calls was great. Just because, I mean, you really get the fact of just how much these two teams dislike each other. I mean, it's one thing, you're obviously going to get the, you know, despicable tactics from Suzuki-Gun, but they always raise it up a level against LIJ and force them to kind of, you know, bring up their game, and obviously that's going to get turned up to another notch once we get to the second call. But yeah, this was a great, great opening, and LIJ really, you know, as a team, got the better of Suzuki-Gun, where, you know, a lot of times you'll see them kind of get one over on LIJ individually. So that was cool to see them come together and be able to do what they did.
Alex, what do you think of this one?
Yeah, it was good. You know, well, continuing the storyline, Suzuki showing terrible sportsmanship, as always, by just battering Naito before the bell, and yeah, lots of fighting on the floor and battering him with chairs and the barriers and stuff like that. Yeah, I don't think he likes Naito very much. And yeah, but I mean, other than that, like you say, it was a really back and forth fun match. It's interesting that Evil got the pin, and he got the pin in the tag match as well, so I think they're really continuing the momentum behind him. Obviously he had the shot at Okada last year after the G1. He was the first guy to beat him in over a year in the G1. So they've obviously got big big plans for Evil. So it's been interesting to see that he's picking up the wins in a lot of these tag matches.
Then we had a kind of precursor for the following night's main events, which was a tag team match featuring Kazuchika Okada and Will Ospreay as they defeated Hiroshi Tanahashi and Kushida in 16 minutes and 15 seconds. This was absolutely awesome. I love this match, and I love the way New Japan used these matches to set up the next event. This was really, really good storytelling because it was more about both of them working as a team as opposed to the individuals. There was the individual rivalry, but you know that Okada and Tanahashi respect one another, and you know that Will Ospreay and Kushida respect one another. So there's a different layer there with this. There's a different dynamic to this tag match, and it was a lot of fun to watch. What did you think of it, Alex?
Yes, agreed, yeah. I mean, all four guys are great, and they all work so well with each other. It was interesting, obviously, to see when the juniors mixed it with the heavyweight guys, you know, like Kushida and Okada had great chemistry. The bit where I think this led into the finish, didn't it? Kushida had him in the hoverboard lock and he counted it into the tombstone. That was great. It was just a great match. It was probably the best thing on the show to this point. Like, they're just four great wrestlers and they all work really well together. So yeah, it was a lot of fun.
Marcus, what did you think?
Yeah, I absolutely love this match. You know, these four guys and what we were going to eventually get in this singles match, I don't think you could have got a better match that showed you what was in store without giving everything away, but still delivering just a great match. All three of those things. I mean, it was fantastic, like you said, to see the two work as a team. Like, it was the perfect precursor. So without you walking away from it going like, okay, they obviously held back. They didn't hold back, but they also didn't show you everything what they were going to do individually with each other, which is incredible. So, you know, great match.
Yeah, fantastic. This next semi-final of this particular night of Wrestling Dontaku was Cody defeating Kota Ibushi in 23 minutes and 36 seconds in another story match based around Cody's dislike of Kota Ibushi because he's friends with Kenny Omega and the continuing story of Spoilt Cody. There was more forced kissing in this match, which we've well documented we don't like. But apart from that, this was a good match. It was all right. It was very, very good. And I think Cody is kind of starting to reach his zenith as a storyteller. He's not as athletically gifted as Kota Ibushi, but who the hell is? So, you know, he can't do the things that Kota does, and he has to do them through storytelling, and I think he's been the right guy kind of to tell these stories in that sense. Still don't like the stuff he does a lot of the time, and I think he needs to kind of look at that. He has reduced it an awful lot, and I don't think he's been as tone deaf as he could have been, but it still could have been better and probably shouldn't have happened in the first place. Other than that, good. A solid FAA. What did you think of this, Marcus?
Yeah, same here. Obviously, it's going to be a mismatch in terms of styles, but, you know, again, that's what Cody's character work comes in. And more so, back towards what he was doing before, it kind of got murky in terms of mixing up certain stuff that probably shouldn't have been messed with, like James alluded to. But, you know, solid nonetheless. And again, the toughest man in New Japan continues to be the table. So, which Cody found out. Continues to be the table, man, I tell you what. But, and he pulled out a win. I didn't see that coming. But, again, it continues that story. And, you know, as long as this thing is going to be going on with him and Kenny, you know, Cody's going to use Ibushi as collateral damage. And the fact that he got the win just, you know, continues the momentum in his corner. And obviously the match to follow this only, you know, capitalizes off of that. So,
yep. Cody continuing to be a dick. Alex, what do you think of this matchup?
Those Japanese tables, man. they are brutal. I did like the fact on that Ibushi obviously did it once, the table didn't break, so he got like a sick smile on his face. It's like, oh, I'm going to do it again. And then the table still didn't break properly, which was just like, yeah, just brutal. So these two had one of the best matches at Wrestle Kingdom, which kind of surprises a bit at the time. This wasn't at that level, I didn't think. I think it had a stronger narrative running through it, but I don't think the slower pace necessarily helped it, although I got what, like you say, Cody's character work and stuff like that was all really well done. It felt like it took something away from the middle of the match, how slow they were doing it, but it picked up when they started slapping each other, basically. And then the closing stretch was really great. We mentioned the double stomp on the table, Ibushi doing a mad dive from the top rope over the barrier, which was nuts, basically. But that's Ibushi. He's crazy. I'll say as well, like with the table thing, I appreciated that they did a ref bump before it, rather than just doing it in front of the referee, which is something that we sometimes get a bit wound up with in New Japan. Probably one of its few flaws sometimes is the weapon shots in front of the referees and stuff like that. So I was glad they did that. The finish was a bit flat because I like Cody's new finisher. You know, I love me a good cop killer, vertebraker, but it was just sloppy. It just didn't look like it hurt Ibushi in any way because he didn't hit it right. So it just felt like, oh, well, all right, that's over then. Okay. But I get, obviously, in terms of Cody winning, it makes sense. He's got singles wins over both the Golden Lovers now. I think him and Paige beat them in a tag match as well. Sakura Genesis, if my memory serves me correctly.
Yes,
so
they did. Yeah.
You've kind of got that thing of, you know, Cody kind of having their number in a way, which obviously again adds more to the storyline overall.
So we move on to the main event, which was Kenny Omega defeating Hangman Page in 18 minutes and 23 seconds in the best match of the night, I think, personally. I really enjoyed this. I think Hangman Page has come on so much. He was on which podcast was he on recently? I can't remember which. I think it was maybe Steve Austin's podcast. Anyway, he was on one of the podcasts and he pointed out like the Hangman character doesn't really suit him anymore two years after he was given it. And it was basically he only got it to separate himself from Adam Cole, because obviously Adam Page, Adam Cole. And if you remember back 2 years ago, I got the two confused because there were two blonde-haired, fairly thin wrestlers who had similar body types. And now Adam Page doesn't look anything like Adam Cole and doesn't wrestle anything like Adam Cole either. Shout out for the eyeliner. Nice touch.
Love the eyeliner.
Yes, this was very, very good. What did you think of this, Alex?
Yeah, just to come on the back of that as well, I was listening to the Young Bucks on Jericho's podcast and they were really talking highly about Adam Page as well and how he's going to be a future world champion. He's great and et cetera, et cetera. Basically, this, you know, the big question going into this was whether Page could deliver in his first main event, New Japan main event. I felt like his big match against Jay White at the US show was lacking. We spoke about that on the podcast. Mm. I think you liked it more than I did. Mm. But with this match, I've read like mixed reviews on it. But I'm with you. I really enjoyed it. I thought he really looked good at that level. Probably part of the issue is that New Japan main events have set the bar so ridiculously high that anything that doesn't quite meet that is gets sort of, you know, rejected a little bit and called not good. But this was a really good main event. I mean, it's hard to have a bad match with Kenny Omega, let's face it. And he did his usual thing where he gives his opponent loads, makes them look great, takes a beating, but he still comes out of it looking like a top star. He'd done it with Juice Robinson, Beretta, he did it with Jay White, did it again here. He's one of the best in the business at doing that. In terms of the match itself, you had like Cody attacking before the bell, and then they could get off to this really fast start, which I think helped it. I don't think it would have worked as well if they'd, you know, worked slowly and built. I like the fact that they just went all out from the beginning. You had the rite of passage on the table, which busted him open hard way, Kenny, and then he looked very Dusty Rhodes, Ric Flair kind of thing with the bleach blonde hair going red, which is always welcome to reference that stuff. It was just a really, really good match. They worked well together, apart from the miscommunication near the end where Kenny nearly like knocked his head off when he countered the buckshot lariat attempt into the V trigger. I mean, Page was gone. That wasn't a sell job. He was completely knocked. Did not know where he is, kind of thing. So I think that maybe hurt the end of the match a little bit. It's hard to know what the whether it would have been a bit more back and forth, because after that it was just like Kenny hit a few moves and then won basically, which maybe would have been the way they'd gone anyway. You know, he's the top guy, so it's kind of standard in a way. But I wonder if Paige maybe would have got a little bit more in the last couple of minutes. But yeah, I mean, as an overall package, I thought this was really well done. Paige did come out of it looking like he belonged at that level. I think he gained a lot from it, which was the whole point, basically.
Yeah, I'd agree with all of that, really. It was really, really well done. Marcus, what are your thoughts?
Yeah, Alex got most of it. Cracking match, obviously. Like I said, coming off of that match with Ibushi, you know, Kota, you know, Cody's primed, you know, to come in and of course, you know, ruin Kenny's night. He tried, failed, but it was great, like Alex said, getting it off to that pace, you know, and it would have been some, obviously, we talked about how Hangman's page has come along, but it would have been kind of easy to kind of fall prey into everything that's going on, you know, with Cody and Kenny, and just kind of, you know, ride the waves of that, but he didn't. You know, he capitalized off that and delivered a great outing. He's been just a guy, and we've sung his praises, and rightfully so. That's kind of constantly been building and building and building, and, you know, kind of like what we get with a Juice Robinson, and Kevin Kelly even pointed this out. Those are two guys that are absolutely primed for, you know, titles in the near future, I would say. You know, Paige is, you know, really just been phenomenal, like Alex said, you know, really showing that he's ready for a spot like this. And, you know, obviously Kenny is you know, just on another level, because he's literally war ready. You know, everything he's gone through with Okada and then other guys like that, he's just on another level that the Hangman will eventually see him get to, but he really hung in there. And like Alex said, man, he absolutely got his bell rung by that springboard V-trigger that he got caught with. But yeah, it, you know, just a cracking out, and again, building to that, you know, more Cody and Kenny stuff. But Hangman continues to up that brutality in every match, showing that, you know, even if you're trying to get away from that Hangman character, he's not pulling back any punches or anything. So for him to be able to stand out amidst everything that's going on around him with the beef in the Bullet Club, you know, just shows where he's going. So.
Yeah, yeah. Right then, we move on to night two of Wrestling Dontaku, which was in Fukuoka in Japan. 6,307 in attendance to see the IWGP Heavyweight Championship defended for the 12th time in the current reign by Kazuchika Okada. But let's start at the beginning. Jushin Thunder Liger, Asuki Taguchi, and Tiger Mask defeated Ren Narita, Shota Umino, and Yue Umare in 6 minutes and 34 seconds. Did what it said on the tin. Anyone got any thoughts for that one?
Just pretty much what they did on the first night to an extent, with giving the vets a bit of momentum going into, particularly Taguchi, like I say, getting the win again to go into Best of the Super Juniors. It was pretty good.
No, I'll say the same. Yep.
Yeah. Chase Owens and Yujiro Takahashi defeated Tomoyuki Oka and Yuji Nagata in 6 minutes 11 seconds. And the moral of this story is, don't let Oka finish the match. Any thoughts on this one?
Nothing other than, yeah. Yeah. It was all right.
Okay, no, then.
There's going to be a lot of this with the tag matches. This is pretty good.
Ask you to give the same opinions you did 20 minutes ago, because they were very repetitive.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, go ahead, Alex.
I was just going to say, that's probably the only kind of flaw across the two nights, is that there is a lot of similarities in these early matches.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah, and to their credit, I mean, I think everybody kind of knew, like, okay, what are we going to do that's going to even touch the two main events?
The
two last matches.
Let's
so, you know,
stay the hell out the way.
Yeah.
Exactly.
So, okay. You know, let's just do our thing. These matches just suck, but, you know, obviously we were, you know, literally waiting to exhale once we got the last two. So, you know, again, I think for me, it's always just funny, Don Callis' reactions, you know, to proper Takahashi entrance. But other than that, you know, more the same with these tags.
Yeah. Next, we had a six-man match, which was Rocky Romero, Sho, and Yo. They defeated Suzuki Gun, Taichi, Taka, Michinoku, and Takahashi Aizuka in 6 minutes. Kind of a follow-up to the night before. That's kind of thing we're talking about, repetitiveness. Again, Chaos, Tomohiro Ishii, and Toru Yano defeated Toei Hinare and Togi Mikabe, which was a direct rematch from night from Wrestling Hinokuni, I believe. And was it the night before? No, they didn't wrestle each other the night before. But they would wrestle each other in a lot in the space of a week. Let's put it that way. Yeah, and Henry Wright
and Ishii have been in a lot of tags against each other as well. Yeah. But because they're obviously, I get the idea. Like with this one, they were obviously he's getting closer to pinning him. That's kind of like the story that they're pushing, where Henare keeps obviously taking him on. He's just getting closer every time to beating him. Which,
he's not going to.
So it was good they carried that on into it.
Yeah, he's not going to though, is he?
Yeah, you never know. You never know with New Japan.
I'm not completely convinced. What was good though was Chaos, Hiroki Goto, Jay White, and Yoshihashi defeated Dave Finley, Juice Robinson, and in 11 minutes and 4 seconds. Jay White playing the goth younger cousin of the wedding party. In this particular match. Okay, Alex, what did you think of this?
Yeah, no, this was good. Fun, action-filled tag match, which is, like we say, kind of what you would expect from all these guys, minus one guy in there who we don't think should be there, but we'll move past that. And, it's interesting in terms of what it's maybe setting up. Looks like Tai Chi's going to get a shot at Goto, which I'll be intrigue to see. I don't know how that's going to match up style wise, but I think it'll be interesting. Jay White against Juice Robinson, I think, will be a lot of fun if that's the direction they're going to go in. Because I think, like we say, Juice has been great, certainly in the past year. Like, he's really, really improved. I think Jay White is getting better and better every time I see him. He's starting to understand that character more. I think that'll be really good. They work well together here, so I think a singles match will be a lot of fun.
Marcus, your thoughts?
Yeah, like Alex said, a lot of solid tag. Obviously, interesting stuff going on surrounding my boy Goto and defending this title. And hopefully, they're going in the direction, like Alex said, with Juice and Jay, because yet another thing for, you know, Juice to be able to step up like we got with Hangman, you know, against somebody like Jay, who's getting proving himself as a champion, so that'll be cool. And really, any match where a certain individual takes the L is grade A for me.
All right, then we move on. Los Ignorables de Japón, Bushi Evil, Hiromu Takahashi, Sanada and Tetsuya Naito defeat Suzuki Gun, Davey Boy Smith Jr., El Desperado, Lance Archer, Minoru Suzuki, and Yoshinobu Kanemura in 8 minutes and 31 seconds. Bunch of fun, this. It was interesting listening to the commentary on this and, like, you know, what the commentators feel about these two teams, because obviously they are both kind of evil, really. So it was evil versus evil. What did you think of this one, Marcus?
I love this, everything about it. I'm not even a Suzuki Gun fan, but damn, I love that group entrance. You know, really great stuff. Just freaking them turning Don Callis into a super junior because he ran. What was it rounds anytime, you know, Suzuki Gun comes out, that great stuff, and just them attacking, you know, them doing the entrance was great. Obviously, you know, Suzuki has a natural beef with Naito, specifically coming out of the fact that he lost his belt, so going out to him in the audience, you know, just great stuff. And I think the best thing about this match for me was just seeing the natural gangland style attack by Suzuki Gun, and then having LIJ kind of seem like, you know, the underdogs that have to come back with flawless teamwork. I mean, the teamwork was just, it was beautiful to watch for them to be able to do that and counteract all the crap that they took off of Suzuki Gun and get out the win. Was fantastic and really shows the camaraderie that group really has about each other. And they told that great story also, you know, on commentary, just how much those guys have each other's backs, where you kind of got Suzuki Gun naturally being led by Suzuki, you know, with those thuggery tactics. But it was right on time. It didn't need to go long. As many times as these two teams have touched and are going to touch in the future, it was right on time.
Exactly. I think it was really, really just a class piece of work and got everybody over the way it was supposed to. And then, at the end of the match, whilst everyone was heading back to the locker room, Tetsuya Naito stopped to talk to a fan and was hit in the head, and then was taken to the ring and beaten down by this fan who was wearing an LIJ mask, a hoodie, and a pair of jeans. And then, eventually, he took the mask off to be Chris Jericho. So what happened there then?
a lot of good stuff.
a lot of great stuff. Obviously, it was cool to see what we got with these guys at the end. But poor freaking Naito, man, he just can't catch a break. I mean, obviously, it's, you know, going against Suzuki is enough, but freaking Jericho, man, coming with the thing, and God bless him for however long he was in that mask, because when he took it off, he looked like an Oompa Loompa by the head. He was turning blue. So it was really cool. Obviously, you know, great thing about, you know, Jericho obviously swerving everybody beforehand, you know, basically telling everybody that I'm kind of, you know, done with New Japan, and obviously now we see that again, he was fibbing. But great, you know, being in New Japan, he's allowed, you know, been allowed to really turn up that aggression, you know, just on everybody from, you know, who he's stepping into the ring with to, you know, the workers, the guys, the young boys, all those things. It's really great to see that aggression turned up. And, you know, I just really feel bad for Naito because he got his knees. You know, any beef with Suzuki is life-threatening. And now he's getting this type of aggression from Jericho. I really hope LIJ just learned to just leave with everybody, don't leave at all.
Yeah, I mean, Jericho has been swerving, as he told us. He was done with New Japan Pro Wrestling. He obviously signed on for the greatest Royal Rumble of all. So we kind of assumed of all time ever to centrally controlled government that don't let women drive until recently. And anyway, moving on. Sorry, I have issues with that show.
Yeah, we could talk a lot about this.
Yeah, if you want to hear my thoughts on that show, there's a Total Wrestling Writers podcast a couple of weeks ago where I kind of vented my spleen for a while. I've listened to that. But anyway, so we went and did that show, and everyone kind of thought he was done with New Japan Pro Wrestling because, you know, but did Vince even know he was coming back? I'm assuming he did.
Yeah, I think so. It's just, we need to just stop believing anything Jericho says at this point. He's so good at working us. I think it made more sense that obviously he went and did the Greatest Royal Rumble, and we, like you say, everyone just thought, well, he's obviously going back to WWE, he's done with New Japan. But then at the show itself, he came out at number 50 in that massive Royal Rumble. Was in the ring for about 2 minutes, did basically nothing, and then just got thrown out. And I think in hindsight now, that makes a lot more sense. It's like, I think someone was trying to avoid injury before their massive payday in Japan. But yeah, I'm so glad that he's come back to this Naito match. I think it's going to be tremendous. I mean, they're going on before what will probably be the match of the year, which we'll talk about in a bit, but... yeah, I just thought the angle was great. The fact that Naito bladed as well was really interesting. You know, yeah. It's very rare in Japan.
We don't see that very often.
I think from what people have been saying, Jericho is literally just getting complete creative freedom there to do what he wants. So, and long may they continue giving him that, because he's clearly loving it. The freedom that he didn't have in WWE to basically say, let's do the angle this way. And it's, yeah. It worked so well, and he looked quite funny in goth makeup doing it as well.
Yeah, dressing himself up as Bushy in a cosplay, that's going the extra mile. Right, then, we move on. We've got three matches left. So, let's see, there was a 10-man tag match, which was the Bullet Club 5th anniversary match, which featured Golden Lovers Kenny Omega and Kota Ibushi, who is not part of Bullet Club, but that plays in later. Bad Luck Fale, Tama Tonga, and Tangaloa, that's Team Kenny. They defeated Cody, Hangman Page, Mighty Scurll, Matt Jackson, and Nick Jackson of the Young Bucks in 8 minutes and 47 seconds. They are obviously Team Kenny. Thoroughly entertaining match, and the heat between Kenny and Cody continues, with the Young Bucks trying to say, look, can't we just talk? Marty Scurll being incredibly confused. Kota Ibushi not caring because he wants to win. And Bad Luck Fale just looking mean at people. This was great. I just love this match, top to bottom. And at the end of the night, the Bone Soldiers all threw it up one last time. Probably all got sued as well. Whilst what was brilliant to me was Kota looking down the aisle, who's not a member of Bullet Club, but hangs out with those guys all the time in the story of what's going on. It was like, that's the way it should be in Bullet Club. I'm happy that they're back together again. Look on his face, which was brilliant. Just like, he told the story with his eyes, didn't have to say anything. And I just loved this match. It was well done. It was what Bullet Club's kind of been about for 5 years. And those kimonos that they've been wearing kind of like makes you feel like there's a lot of wrestling history happened. I mean, Finn Virgil Devitt, AJ Styles, The Bucks, Kenny Omega. The guys who have been talked about in pro wrestling for the last 5 years have come from Bullet Club. And though I'm a Chaos fan, I do have respect for the Bone Soldiers. Marcus, what did you think of this?
Yeah, same. I love this. You know, like the LIJ Suzuki match, it didn't need to be this you know, 20-minute, you know, all-star classic just because of the guys that were involved. It, you know, needed to be around this fifth anniversary and, you know, this uncivil war, you know, that's going on and kind of unraveling that. And you telling that story of Kenny being in it and with Ibushi and the Bucks not really wanting to, you know, go after, you know, Kenny or Ibushi and that whole thing. And poor, you know, poor Scrolls just been caught in this separation, not full divorce, if you will. Separation just been caught in the middle and just coming up with this beef against Fale, which, you know, again, is a fool's errand. But, you know, just great stuff, you know, with that. And, yeah, I mean, you know, everything to just work. And the great thing about this match, freaking Cody going to commentate, "Where's my commander?" Like, again, if this is not telling you that you're not one of them, I don't know what is.
We don't you don't get again, a kimono.
Yeah, he won't listen. The arrogance on that guy. But yeah, just all around great stuff. And like you said, that you know, that shot at the end with them throwing it up, obviously, you know, you would have to imagine some legal ramifications, but because they are so good at being true independent contractors, they can pay it. So take that, Vince. But so just great stuff, and Ibushi just letting them have that moment, you know, because that was their moment. This shows around them, you really get, you know, like you said, looking at those you know, those celebratory roles, man, you really just, it takes you back to everything that's gone on from the start of this to, you know, just the influence they've had in New Japan to you know, just the business in general. You know, you got to love the Bullet Club, you know, regardless of how you feel, you know, you can't deny what they've done. So it was a great, great moment.
So, Alex, is Bullet Club fine?
I mean, they're claiming they are. They clearly are not. But this should, this puts a band-aid on the situation for a little while, keeps the storyline going. I enjoyed how Matt suddenly wanted to talk about the situation. It's like, oh, now you want to talk. Now you want to talk. Yeah, it was, I love the stuff with Kenny chasing Cody off and stuff like that as well. I think, like, you guys have pretty much covered it. It was just really, really advanced the storyline really well. And for now, they're okay. But I think that isn't going to last, and should take them. It basically cools it off, I think, is the idea, while Omega does some other stuff for a little bit. But I'm sure we'll be back to it pretty soon.
Well, now Cody isn't champion in Ring of Honor anymore, he can go to the G1. So that's...
Yes,
one
I think
thing.
He will probably work the G1 this time as well.
Should be interesting to see what happens there. I just love the fact, like, Ibushi, New Japan shaking with Fale is just fantastic. It's just like the two most polar opposite characters in the company being on the same team is awesome. All right, then. We move on to the IWGP Junior Heavyweight title match. Will Ospreay goes up against his lifelong nemesis, his other lifelong nemesis, Kushida, 23 minutes and 36 seconds. Fantastic, fantastic junior heavyweight match that really stretched the boundaries and was a lot safer than the match he had with Skrull a couple of months ago, actually. Did it all within the boundaries of not being stupid, and managed to take our breath away once again. And his Stormbreaker takes the victory over Kushida. Alex, your thoughts on this matchup?
Yeah, this was phenomenal, which we knew it would be, but it was up there with the best work they've done together. They just have such great chemistry when they work together. Ospreay is having the best year of his career so far as well. He's just having, particularly in New Japan, just every title defense is a classic at the moment. Like you say, it was a bit safer than the Skrull match, but there was still about five spots in a row at one point where I was just out of my chair every time. Particularly the Kushida roll into the DDT off the apron, which is just like, that's just nuts. But I mean, the best spot of the match wasn't even a necessarily complicated one. It was that Kushida punch spot was just great. Like, I knew once they started exchanging that he was going to do the punch at some point, but the way they did it with Ospreay just running straight into it and the way he just crumpled completely and the camera behind him when it happened, it was just, was just brilliant. It looked amazing. Just a great piece of work. I love Ospreay's new finisher as well, not just because he's named it after Thor's axe in Infinity War, but that did get approval from me as well. But yeah, I think it's a really cool finisher. Add something else to his arsenal. It was a great match.
Marcus, what do you think of this matchup? I know your boy didn't do as well as he should have done.
I can't say enough great stuff about this match. You know, piggybacking off of Alex, simply adored it. My favorite match of these two shows, definitely a match of the year for me. Anytime these two lock up, I mean, you go all the way back to those finals and the best of Super Juniors. I mean, that was phenomenal, and for these guys to be able to, you know, again, just every time they lock up, they elevate the game and they break a new barrier, it seems. And you know, the chemistry is flawless. You know, like Alex said, all of the great spots, the freaking sick vert offs that I have Kushida buys. But, I've become a huge Ospreay fan. I mean, you know, I can only imagine the pain he's riddled with, and they did a great job. I pointed that out on commentary. Like, Callis was pointing out, like, I would take 6 months off if I was this kid. But, you know, just what he's having. This is everything he's been working for, you know, not only to get this title, you know, but kind of vanquish his demons, both in Skrull and now Kushida. So for him, this match meant everything. It really was like the endurance of Kushida versus the iron will of Ospreay, who, you know, could very well fall prey to his injuries, but he never does, and, you know, continues to defy, you know, just all the odds. And, you know, for him, like a Kushida against Takahashi, to come up with a new thing in his arsenal, you know, like Kushida did with that Back to the Future, and with Ospreay, obviously, that great Stormbreaker, which not only looks great, but also, as a superhero fan, I love the fact that it's named after Thor's axe, and obviously huge, you know, superhero comic book fan, and, you know, it's just phenomenal. These two cannot have a bad match, and the best compliment I can give it to it is just, you know, we can't really give it the praise it deserves. You have to go and watch this match, obviously, after it. But you have to go watch this match. You can't call yourself, you know, a wrestling fan, and definitely not a New Japan fan if you do.
No, it was fantastic. Now, after this match, Tama Tonga came down to ringside with the new Bone Soldier. He turned out to be Taiji Ishimori, formerly of Impact Wrestling and formerly of Pro Wrestling NOAH. Now, here's the thing. A couple of weeks ago, the boys at Voices of Wrestling were playing through a theory on Twitter that Taiji Ishimori had left NOAH and gone to wrestle for Impact just to get attention from New Japan Pro Wrestling. And they went, well, it worked for Sonata, but it's a bit far-fetched and a bit too soon to do it again, isn't it? Apparently not. Worked fine for him. Yeah, got signed. He's the new Bone Soldier. He's challenging Will Ospreay, I'm presuming, at Dominion, and he will be in the Best of Super Juniors. Saying that you're going to try and get a job full-time in the United States of America and then getting a job with the biggest composition of the company you're working for. Smart move. Not great on the loyalty front, but smart move.
Yeah, not too bad for him. Also, should we talk about Tama Tonga with the most homoerotic promo ever to introduce him? Just like, look at him. Look at him. Look at his muscles. It's just so funny. I think Ishimori and Bullet Club, it kind of, we were talking about the whole Bullet Club storyline. That's another kind of element to it now, because Marty's not going to be happy that there's another junior heavyweight in there when he's the junior ace in Bullet Club at the moment. So I think that'll probably throw some spanners in the works there as well.
Yeah. Taiji Ishimori's recent work in Impact Wrestling has been fantastic. So look out for some really cool stuff as well.
Yeah, it really has. That didn't even click for me until Alex said it, but it really was a homoerotic promo. It really did. It did seem like, because Tom was never off on the mic, but it really kind of seemed like he was, like, you know, taking these, you know, unusual breaks, It's like he almost got distracted by what he had to say in this, in just Ishimori's build. It was like, look at him. Look, I don't even need to take the mask off. Look at the abs on this. which are quite impressive. You know, Ishimori is obviously not skipping gym day. But, you know, yeah, it was great. And, you know, for somebody like myself who was unfamiliar with the whole Bone Soldier history of it all, for me to come into it with this is great because obviously I'm the Impact guy. So, you know, watching Ishimori go from there, which, like James said, his work has been phenomenal. Was a great X Division champion. And now, you know, transferring into this and him potentially locking up with Osprey, obviously he's going to be in the Super Junior tournament, but you know, just that potential there is going to be great. I can't wait to see what he's going to bring in New Japan. So yeah, great stuff. Bullet Club gets a new member, and who better to, you know, bring him in there than one of the original Bone Soldiers in Tonga. So great stuff.
Yeah, I mean, this is also, yeah, you're right, it does play into Team Cody, Kenny versus Team Cody as well, because Marty Scurll is one of Cody's guys. So yes, to bring him a rival junior heavyweight who has a heavy reputation is a very smart move to further the frustration in the storyline. And Tama Tonga bringing some of the gay. Moving on to the heavyweight championship match. Kazuchika Okada defeats Hiroshi Tanahashi in 34 minutes and 36 seconds. And quite frankly, I can't say it's the best wrestling match I've seen this year, because I saw Mika Satomura and Kaylee Ray have the best wrestling match I've seen this year last week in person in the New York Hall. But by God, it was close. The fact that these two matches were like 24 hours apart, and it was literally the best four wrestlers in the world had the best matches they could possibly have.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I have to say that I did prefer Kaylee Ray versus Mika Satomura, but it was awfully close. This was just breathtakingly good. It's Tanahashi's last stand. He throws everything but the kitchen sink and then finds a couple more kitchen sinks to chuck the original kitchen sink with. This was something else. And the effort these guys put in. Meltzer gives it 5.5 stars. And I don't often agree with Big Dave, but I think he's about bang on with this. What did you think of this one, Marcus?
Yeah, 100% agree with everything you and I don't be on the day train either, but he's 100% right on this. You know, for these guys, you know, obviously they've been locked up, to my knowledge, far more times than Ospreay and Kushida, but for these guys to lock up as many times as they have and just continue, you know, to elevate every time, giving you some of the same but something new, is crazy. And just to, you know, build towards this match, I mean, you know, I always go back to, you know, me coming into New Japan with, you know, watching that huge Wrestle Kingdom show when Tanahashi beat him and he sent him crying to the back. And now just how the tables have turned. You got Okada literally on top of the wrestling world looking down on somebody like Tanahashi, who he had to overcome to even get here. And just being on the verge of, you know, breaking every record, and most of which is Tanahashi. So beating this guy in so many different ways, you know, this absolute legend and really the heart and soul of New Japan, it feels. You know, so the match itself, great. And you know, when James says, you know, it, you know, gives you the best match of you know, the year, and it's two women, take his word for it, please. Yeah, I mean, it was phenomenal. And, you know, at this point, you know, there was kind of inkling going into the match that it could happen. But at this point, they're literally probably going to have to put Okada in an Infinity War for him to lose to somebody like character like Thanos, for me to believe that he can actually take an L. And again, like the match previously with Ospreay and Kushida, the match was phenomenal, and what came after was phenomenal. So, you know, just hats off to these guys. Like you said, so many kitchen sinks between these two matches. You know, Home Depot, where you at? But, yeah, it's nothing short of phenomenal. And it was Tanahashi's, you know, like you said, last stand. But we don't know Okada ride, and it doesn't seem like it's going to stop until he's damn well ready. So,
it's going to be phenomenal. Alex, what do you think of this fantastic matchup?
Yeah, just to build on what you guys have said, like, I mean, first of all, it's Okada Tanahashi's the definitive wrestling rivalry of the past decade for me. And this was a tremendous main event. Like, this is right up there with the best matches they've had. They were calling back to every match they've had in the past. Like you said, this is Tana's last stand. This is probably his final big main event match, and boy, did he go on a high note, if that's the case.
Yeah.
I think it's so interesting, like, the change in dynamic. You know, it's been so cool to watch the rivalry develop over the years. You know, for so long, Okada was obviously the young upstart, and Tanahashi was the undisputed ace of the company, and now that torch has been passed, and Okada's the new ace. So you had that story of the older veteran trying to recapture that old magic for one night against the new top guy. I thought they told that really well. Just the layered narrative throughout, there was stuff like, you know, Tanahashi broke Okada's wrist control for the first time ever,
yeah,
just by slapping him so much, basically, which was great. I think I read on Voices of Wrestling, actually, that Okada kicked out of the high fly flow a bang on the 30-minute mark of the match.
Oh, wow.
Which was a callback to their draw last year, which is, if that's the case, that is unbelievable attention to detail to do that. Like, just, yeah, insane. And yeah, it's just, again, like Marcus said with the last match, this is one you have to go and watch. Like, it's such a key part of their rivalry and such a big part of his title reign. Okada's just, yeah, fantastic match. And then we'll talk about what came next now, I guess. But yeah, in terms of the story of Okada breaking the record, you know, Tanahashi's defense record, Okada basically has broken every record now as champion. And yeah, what a way to do it.
Yeah, Okada-san came out and he asked for three things, and one was Tanahashi-san is pretty tough, isn't he? And the other one was, what's next? And then the third one was, well, nothing really, except for Kenny Omega, which is pretty big thing to say, really. And then they had a bit of a discussion to set the rules up for the challenge, and Kenny came out, and Kenny said, well, we can't do the same things again, can we? And Okada went, yeah, no time limits this time. We're not mucking about with time limits anymore. We need a winner. Okay. Oh, we can do better than that, can't we? Says Kenny. Well, how about best of three falls? All right, then. So the two best main event wrestlers in the world are now going to go into a best of three fall no time limit match for the IWGP Heavyweight Championship at Dominion to settle once and for all the biggest feud in pro wrestling outside of the WWE. And to be honest, I'd say the biggest feud in pro wrestling, because there isn't one like this one anywhere ever.
Agreed.
Alex, what do you think of this?
Yeah. Whew. Like I said earlier, we went from a few weeks ago, it's like, oh, how are they going to have two strong enough main events for this Dominion show, to this is now going to be the event of the year at this rate, because we've got Naito Jericho, which is going to be unbelievable, and yeah, this is, oh god, Okada Omega, I mean, I'm not sure my emotions can handle Infinity War and Okada Omega 4 in the same year.
Is it going to go
a few weeks of each other?
Is it going to go like an hour and a half?
I mean, God knows how long they're actually going to go in this one. I mean, the fact that, like you say, they've just done it. The biggest match of the year, basically. I was going to say, up until this point, my match of the year was probably outside of Japan, was in NXT. That's my favorite match of the year so far, was Gargano and Almas, which I loved. It won't be. After this is nailed on, I think, to be match of the year. I can't see how they're not gonna basically try. They're obviously going to try and top everything they've done in the past, which is no easy feat, but yeah, three falls and no time limit. And I guess the question is Okada's broken all the records now, so
yeah,
is this the time? I think finally, because this will be probably the perfect time to do it now.
Yeah, and then you've got Kenny versus Naito at Wrestle Kingdom next year, or
well,
Kenny versus Okada.
They could go that way. Pardon?
Or Kenny versus Okada.
Yeah, there's a few different routes they could go now. Omega wins the belt, you could, like you say, have Naito face him at Wrestle Kingdom after winning the G1. They could potentially have Omega win and then lose the belt to Naito before Wrestle Kingdom.
Yeah.
Or something like that. There's all sorts of fantasy booking scenarios where this could go. I mean, we've kind of assumed it would be Okada Naito rematch this year, but maybe they'll go a different way. I mean, I think this would be the perfect time to switch the belt to Omega, but whether they'll do it, I don't know. I don't think they'll get a better opportunity than this.
I go with you. I would switch it to Omega, then Omega loses it to Naito at King of Pro Wrestling, and then Okada wins the G1, so you get Naito versus Okada, so you can hold off Kenny versus Okada to the following year. That'd be my, off the top of my head.
I think that's probably what I'd lean towards them doing.
Yeah.
We'll see, I suppose.
Yes, Marcus, your thoughts on this fantastic thing in pro wrestling?
Oh, man. First off, I'm going to lean towards you guys 100% on, you know, booking logically for the future, because I just can't comprehend what these guys are going to do next. I just give them my faith and they deliver every time. But first off, you know, like Alex, that Almas Gargano match is also on my match of the year list, you know, without question. But here, I mean, man, I think, you know, going back to that show after we did it, you know, at last year's Dominion, you know, the greatest thing I said about that you know, Okada Kenny match was I can't emotionally go through that again. You know, and come back on it. You know, not just because that, you know, Dominion is one of the best shows that they do, and it's around my birthday, but that show last year was hands down my favorite wrestling show of the year. Like, it was just from top to bottom, it was phenomenal show. And then to me, it was everything that you want in pro wrestling, it was just phenomenal. So for them to be able to potentially top that is nuts. It's insane. It's nuts. And it kind of reminds you of what Marvel is doing with their damn movies, and it's just insane. I mean, for these two to be able to bring that full circle, and freaking Okada running down the list of guys he's been through, like some easy lay X's that he's just run through. Like, it's insane. Look at that list, and it's incredible, because those are not a bunch of scrubs on that list, but the way he's beating them, It's phenomenal. It's really spoken to what his reign has been. So for them to bring this full circle, and for Kenny to be in the midst of what he's in the midst of with everything with Bullet Club, and to still, you know, come out and be able to do this, and then raising the bar, because you know, they don't really do no time limit, you know, what was going to be a last man standing thing.
No, they don't.
Two out of three falls.
Yeah.
So for them, you know, for them to just, you know, elevate not only just, you know, what they can do in the match, but the matches itself is just phenomenal. And I can't wait for this. Obviously, I'm going to have to, you know, set some money aside for an oxygen tank. You know, beforehand, because I think you're going to need it, you know, for this type of thing. But it's just, it's incredible. And like you said, I would want them to drop it to Kenny. But at this rate, I'm like, the way they built Okada up, who can beat him? Like, you almost have to, you know, bring somebody like Thanos to New Japan in real life for me to believe that somebody could actually knock off Okada. I hope they give it to Kenny, because I think he deserves it. It's been a long time coming, and to see him finally get that much needed win over Okada after all this time, I think will be phenomenal. And obviously, it will be the end of everything for Cody.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, it would destroy him, and I would love to see, you know, a great feed of him watching from home, and then Omega get the win, and him just trash his TV a la Mick Foley did years ago. I think it would be phenomenal. But yeah, I just can't wait. You know, Dominion, again, for this card to be shaping up the way it is, and for this to be the same damn company that puts on Wrestle Kingdom, it's nuts. It's absolutely nuts. But, you know, we're the benefactors of it, and I can't wait.
Indeed. It's going to be absolutely fantastic. Well, that wraps up our coverage of Pro Wrestling Dontaku and Golden Week in Japan. I'd like to thank my guest today, Mr. Alex Watt. Thank you very much, sir.
Yes, thank you. I can't wait to cover that Dominion show, by the way.
No, that's going to be awesome. I'm Mr. Marcus Green of Total Wrestling Magazine. Thank you, sir.
My pleasure. Always great being on these shows. It's been a while since I've been on with Alex, so great time.
I'm also Total Wrestling Magazine. You can find me stuff I've written there, and the stuff Marcus has written there on their website. It's very good. Marcus's roundup of the conference call with TNA Impact executives, or whoever's been put on the line with Impact, is always entertaining. And Also, I wrote some interviews. There's a sneak preview interview with Chris Wolf going up there soon, I hope, for this week's Female Focus, who I managed to interview last week before I went to Wrestle Queendom, which is going to be our subject of the podcast next week, where you will find, hopefully, me, Alex Edwards, who was actually shooting that show for the production company, Cy Huth, who went with me, and Chelsea Spollen, who was not there. She was in New York, but she did watch it, so she would like to review it too. So we're going to look at Wrestle King at Queendom next week. That's been our show for today. You can find me at Sheriff Lone Star. You can find Alex at AlexWatt187. You can find Marcus at Paradox Kid. You can find the show at Troopany Show on Twitter, The Troopany Show on Facebook, The Troopany Show on Patreon, where you could please pledge, and keep The Troopany Show free forever for everyone. Take care, and we'll see you next week. Bye!